Department greater license to abuse our rights and freedoms? Some Justice Department officials seem to think so. According to a Justice Department report, thousands of claims of abuses have been filed since the act was passed. Given the short time the Patriot Act has been in effect, this raises some troubling questions. For instance, can the government be trusted with its new powers? And should the Justice Department be the one monitoring the abuses? Should our government be spying on its own citizens? The point of law is our Bill of Rights. They stand as a defense against the government's efforts to control our lives. And that's one of your first liberties. This is John Whitehead for the Rutherford Institute.
This has been a public service announcement from the Rutherford Institute. For a free book about your first liberties, visit www.rutherford.org or call toll-free 888-287-1787.
Between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., KWVA Eugene may broadcast material that could be found offensive to some listeners.
Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA Eugene or anyone else. Anarchy Radio on the last day of July. Yes, it is. The dog days of summer. Yeah, Carl and I are here, and I think we just might have somebody on the program next Sunday night from Feral Visions. We're right in the middle of the Feral Visions gathering, the third annual, down there on the North Carolina-Tennessee line. Real curious about that. Well, that was the Japakai dancers from Australia who perform contemporary and traditional Aboriginal music. I was talking to Derek Jensen just a little while ago. I want to remember to put this in, and well, it's fresh in my memory. I was just checking in with him just to see what's up. Maybe this is widely available. He's got a webpage, no doubt. I'm not sure what all is there, but his magnum opus that he worked on for 3 years, Endgame, 2,000 pages or something, I don't know how, maybe it is, I don't know, something like that, will be coming out next May. I thought it was coming out this year, but he switched publishers. Seven Stories Press in New York will be bringing that out. Meanwhile, he's written an anti-zoo book. I just found that out. The guy's an awesome machine of anti-civilization thought. Oh, wait a minute, that's mixing the metaphors. that doesn't really work, does it? Another thing I found out is there was a series I guess the first half of this year, I think he said 12-part series or something like that. I don't know if I got that precisely right, but Canadian television, Charlie Jade is the name of the program, the name of the director. I don't know, her name is Charlie, spelled I-E, Jade. I don't know, maybe that could be downloaded. Anyway, it turns out that Culture Make-Believe was really the Bible for this series, and that's kind of encouraging. That's a cool sign, because Culture of Make-Believe is a, you know, I think it's a powerful book, powerful indictment of the whole modern deal, and they were big on that, and that informed this series. Let's see if I can get a look at that. Speaking of personal connections, personal news, my friend Shane was in Israel on an archaeological dig about a month ago. I just ran into her on the weekend, and well, I'd like to have her on the show. That's a good idea. Maybe that could happen. Anyway, one thing that stood out, just for now, I'll mention this. She was in Jerusalem, and she said anarchist graffiti was everywhere. She couldn't believe it, just everywhere in Jerusalem. And I asked her if she'd run into the Anarchists Against the Wall folks or any of their stuff, and she hadn't. But all kinds of anarchist graffiti in Arabic and in English. Well, we got some news. I want to say that a little bit later, because a couple of people have brought this up just recently, kind of out of nowhere in a certain way, from Aufheben, which is a Marxist publication from the UK. I don't even know if it's around. I think they did about 4 issues in the 90s. I don't know if they still exist. Kind of doubt it. Maybe they do. Anyway, it's a review article of Freddie Perlman's Against History, Against Leviathan, and this longish review essay is called Civilization and Its Latest Discontents. And I thought this discussion of this, my views on this, might add a little bit of light on this whole thing about the left, what is the left, that meaningless term and all that other stuff, which I'm kind of getting tired of hearing, but let's get into that a little bit. I've also been thinking about Freddie just lately. It was 20 years ago this week that he died, and he was just 50. He would only be 70 right now if he were still with us. And I might actually read a very brief preface to a Turkish edition. There'll be a Turkish edition of this very book that was reviewed 10 years ago, Against History, Against Leviathan, and I was asked to write a preface, so it's a short one. I may read that. Okay, elsewhere in the news, there have been suspicious fires in Whatcom County, destroying 2 homes in a construction in less than a week. Let's see, the Monday, $100,000 damage to a house under construction, and July 20th, about 10 days ago, the first one. We're talking about arson, and let's see, this is mainly from a TV station in Seattle. They're looking into whether eco-terrorists are trying to send a message, and I don't know, I think this is quite recent. I think we'll find out about that. Well, the anarchist info shop thing continues to happen. I mean, they certainly disappear as well, but there's now an anarchist info shop in Balikpapan, which is a city of almost 500,000 in East Borneo. That's kind of interesting. All over the place. And the third annual Reclaim the Parks in Modesto, down in Modesto, by the Direct Action Anti-Authoritarians Collective. And they had they had a full day of activities, and Yeah, they really... These are anarchists and other anti-authoritarians from Modesto and Fresno. And, Central Valley, it's maybe not such a hotbed. At least you wouldn't think so. But, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't think that East Borneo has got anything happening. There are a lot of things that don't get publicity that are happening. And actually, that was another thing that Derek was saying. It's kind of funny. He was saying one of the things that's been striking him lately is he's writing all these books, these voluminous books. They're wonderful books. And he said, sometimes it just hits me. Is there anybody who can't know all this? That things are just being destroyed and this is just a machine for killing everything? And why do I have to even say it? Anyway, he was kind of musing about that, but with this Canadian thing and quite a number of other deals, I mean, there's definitely serious interest in ideas that try to tackle the whole thing. And he's speaking a lot, and I think we were both kind of feeling like, well, it just keeps... things are just chipping away and building up, and then it's going to break through. I mean, I don't think that's too crazy a way to look at it. Well, there's always Iraq in the news. Wednesday, yeah, yes, there is. Carl finds that amusing. I'm going to turn in Carl. I think this is a definite violation of the Patriot Act or something.
Something or other.
Don't you think? this is a good one here for the middle of the week. AP story about military folks in the occupation, the U.S. occupation forces, sicking the dogs on prisoners, attack dogs munching on prisoners. And, you know, it's just funny. This is every day, the abuse of prisoners. I do think they would stop it if they could, but it's deeper than that. I think it does just... the function of this whole sick culture and society, and unless somehow they're trying to make everything ramp up the hatred for the Imperial Army over there. And you know, one of the funny things in the liberal versus conservative thing, one of the staples lately is liberals say, well, you know, this war is just causing all this terrorism outside of Iraq. It's just creating all this terrorism, to which the Bush regime folks say, oh, 9/11, I think, occurred before the war against Iraq, you know, the perfect squelch. Well, except that forgets the first Gulf War. It forgets the military bases in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, that's only the superficial stuff in a certain way. I mean, how far back do you want to go with this? Goes back a little ways. Well, today in the New York Times, front page story, quite a long story called British Bombers' Rage Formed in a Cauldron of Discontent. And this, of course, was about the suicide bombers in London, especially the one early in July, happened on the 7th, where 60 people were killed. And part of this does something to dislodge the whole scenario, at least on one level, that Al-Qaeda is operating all over, Al-Qaeda this and that. And they quote a Muslim person saying that Al-Qaeda is inside. It's really not that sort of operation. It's people in the context of this whole crisis of meaning, which, you know, is more engulfing than even the phenomenon of terrorism. But, you know, there's a glimmer of understanding when you point out that the Western culture, the techno culture, whatever you want to call it, mass society, is directionless and demoralizing. And, you know, when you further consider, for example, that many of the people who do this, that blow themselves up, are not are not the poorest people. Many of them have been in the West even, and you have a certain amount of affluence. Makes me think of the mistake of Marx predicting that the material impoverishment of people would bring the revolution. We're seeing, well, I think we're seeing, roughly speaking, the spiritual impoverishment of people. I mean, that's not all of it, but that's causing seemingly a lot more. And, gee, among other wonderful things, I was reading, it's quite a big layout about, this is a show, one of these kind of art extravaganza shows in Massachusetts called Hope and Healing, Painting in Italy in a Time of Plague, 1500-1800, a major exhibition of a lot of works from those centuries. And speaking of the plague, that's another thing that's haunting things. And this weekend, the death toll, for example, of a pig-borne virus in southwestern China rose to 35. Right next to it, actually, in this media report, is bird flu has killed two more people in Vietnam. And you know, on and on. Meanwhile, you get the same sort of alarm. Well, here's something from the Washington Post also today. Public health officials preparing to battle what they view as an inevitable influenza pandemic, says the world lacks the medical weapons and to fight disease effectively, blah, blah. There will be a global, a very deadly thing. There seems to be a growing consensus about that. And then it says further down, the public, conditioned to believe in the power of modern medicine, or you could just say modern technology, industrial medicine, call it what you want, and referring to the wave of avian flu, bird flu, and quite a number of other things I've mentioned from time to time, West Nile and proliferating ones. Meanwhile, at the end of the week, here in the States, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, announced that it was banning the use of the antibiotic Baytril in poultry because of concerns that it could lead to antibiotic-resistant infections in people, which is exactly what's going on. There's growing resistance. That's not working. And there's no answers. There's no answers out there. Meanwhile, a handful of things here. Pesticide use in or near U.S. schools has sickened more than 2,500 children and school employees in the past 5 years. And lest we leave out the psychological suffering and strange cultural things, the Adderall advantage. It's a longish article. There's a big craze for this, especially among college students. Adderall is a concentration drug to help you concentrate, help kids pass exams and so forth. And one link there that's, I think, somewhat overlooked is all the kids, the millions of younger students who were diagnosed with attention deficit disorder and were pretty routinely put on retinol. No, retinol, is that right?
What Ritalin? Do I want to say?
Ritalin. And allied drugs. Well, now they're in college. And, you know, once again, it's a kind of lifetime syndrome we're seeing of more and more drug dependence. And it isn't just Ritalin to Adderall. And these links are kind of obvious in a number of ways. And let's see, here's another one. A study has found out that 11,600 people caught some sort of infection in Pennsylvania hospitals last year, and almost 1,800 people died from them. That's just in Pennsylvania. I remember Ivan Illich wrote very persuasively and passionately about iatrogenic disease. Iatrogenic is disease that's caused by hospitals and the practice of medicine. And that's a big reality. And one more thing in this vein. Front page of the Oregonian, I think this is yesterday. This is depressing as well. The Columbia River Gorge up north of here, east of Portland between Washington and Oregon. Beloved by Northwest residents for breathtaking scenery and vigorous recreation, has long withstood air and water pollutants from urban Portland to the west. But now, from the east, adding to its unfortunate status as one of the most polluted natural areas in the American West, there's all kinds of ammonia and sulfur and acid rain, all kinds of pollutants from these giant dairy farms and coal-fired power plants, and they're poisoning the once lovely Columbia Gorge. It's also, I remember reading, effaces the petroglyphs from the indigenous people there, the rock drawings. That's just leaching away after 10 or 20,000 years of being there, a few years, and the corrosive pollutants deal with that. You know what? I think before I get into this Alfhaven thing, maybe we should do a little music break right here and catch my breath. Be right back.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we'd travel right down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Avery Hill, where the air smelled like snakes and we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. And the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber and stripped all the land. Well, they dug for their coal till the land was forsaken, then they rode it all down as the progress of man. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. When I die, let my ashes float down the Green River. Let my soul roll on up to the Rochester Dam. I'll be halfway to heaven with paradise waiting, just 5 miles away from wherever I am. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lays? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
Dan Rather was on my program, Newsnight, BBC London, and he said, I can't ask the questions you're asking here. I would be necklaced. They'd put a burning tire around my neck in America. They'd say, I'm not a patriot. That's a very dangerous thing when reporters believe that their silence is patriotism.
Always willing to ask the tough questions. Free Speech Radio News, 6 to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Friday on KWVA Eugene.
And the boss is always money.
It's a little quiet these days, but feel free, please feel free to call in 541-346-0645. And of course, this is kwvaradio.org on the old net. Yeah, I think a lot of people are out at the Feral Visions thing, and I sure, like I said, I'm just so darn curious about that, and I don't know what's going on, but I do think there'll be somebody here next Sunday who get the whole rundown. Well, this I want to talk about this Alf Haben. This is from Alf Haben number 2, I think. Civilization and its Latest Discontents. It's ostensibly a review article of Freddie's Against History, Against Leviathan, which came out in 83, was the second to the last of his books. But it also pulls me in, and I think a lot of the points, they're general points, they're not that specific to this book. This becomes a more general discussion, and so I'm going to kind of take it up in that vein and not get too long-winded with the thing. It gets down to the basic stuff more or less in the second half of this thing, and there are some valid points it makes along the way, but not of, I think the discussion doesn't get too programmatic or deep-seated until a little bit later. One thing I wanted to mention, though, just a little specific thing. It says, in the case of Zerzan, language is said to have arisen not so that people could cooperate with each other, but, quote, for the purpose of lying, and to quote from Elements of Refusal, actually, if you go back and look at that, I think I was laying out, say, half a dozen different theories for the origins of language, and that was one of the, I wouldn't say amusing ones, but it wasn't my point of view that's, maybe it was the reason. I know there are various people who think that was the reason, but I was just giving examples. It's not necessarily my point of view. Well, we go on to the question, and this is basically the question of technology that's under examination here. And this, the point is made that by the people writing this thing, all primitive societies relied completely on the benevolence of nature, something which could easily change, and changes in climatic conditions could wipe out thousands. Well, I think that the literature, the anthropological, archaeological literature, doesn't support that sweeping statement. We get a call. I'll get to that in just a sec. That people relied completely on the benevolence of nature. I don't know if Homo would have been around for 2 or 3 million years if that was really the case. It sort of implies, maybe I'm reading into this, that it's kind of a feed-in to the idea that people are kind of helpless without technology, or that is technological systems, at least not. I don't think they were quite that helpless. Anyway, let's take the call here. Hello there.
Yeah, I'm Fox. You probably remember me.
How you doing?
Fine. I was wondering what happened. I was wondering if you still had the show on there. I was just kind of wondering if you ever maybe need volunteers or maybe more commentators or volunteers. I was just kind of wondering, would KWBA might need any more anarchist program shows?
Hey, yeah. Listen, why don't you call me up? Why don't you call me right at 12 and we can get into that, okay?
Okay, sure. Thanks.
Great. Okay, man. Talk to you later. Bye. Yeah, that's kind of a...
People are chomping at the bit.
They are. They're just, yeah. How can we keep them back? No, that's good. Okay. Let's see. Further on, there's the claim made that primitivists such as Perlman and myself conflate human creative activity per se with alienated creative activity to the point that any human creative activity is already saturated with exploitation and alienation. And that's another strange judgment, it strikes me, another unsupported assertion. I don't know, I'm not sure why anyone would say that. Any creative activity is alienated? I don't know who says that. Anything which affects nature. Well, you can't live in the world without affecting the world. That's kind of just common sense. No one would go that far. It reminds me, and it, once again, maybe I'm kind of reading into it, but that kind of suggests to me that kind of, I think rather bourgeois notion, if you will, that, well, people are just naturally curious. They're naturally creative. They just want to invent things. That sort of thing, I think the exploitation and alienation enters the picture when you have certain basic social institutions that take hold. In other words, and that's something you can check empirically. That's something we do have some minimum knowledge about these things, and you can just check out the record. I mean, it comes with the development of specialization or division of labor, for one thing, and the arrival of domestication, then I think it's much more valid to argue that then activity within those institutions is alienated and exploited. But to say that human creative activity per se, or to say that that's my point of view or Freddie's, I think is odd to say the least. And also, along these same lines in this review essay, is the idea that to privilege the natural world by viewing all our activity as an assault on it, well, it repeats the same point, which I don't think is valid. But then it flows into one of the favorite Marxian points of view. This it's kind of a cute phrase, it's kind of a cute formulation that... we should humanize nature and somehow humans become naturalized. I don't really know what that means. But to humanize nature, that to me it sounds very much like domestication. I don't think nature needs humanizing. That's an operation that some people want to perform on nature. Now that's where you get into the activity, which is negative and I would say leads right on up to where we're at today. Let's see, moving along here. I don't want to get too lost in particulars, but well, in passing, it's stated that the struggle is about the shape of the means of production. Well, it isn't so much about the shape of the means of production if you come to the idea that it's a good idea to put production itself, mass production, into question. Then you don't accept, I mean, it sounds like there's an acceptance of production if you only want to shape it. Here's a more important point. just a little further down. And this shows, this is, you know, this is this is an arguable point of view. This is a basic Marxist point of view. Human instruments are not out of our control within capitalism because they are instruments, but because they are instruments of capital. Let me just repeat that. Human instruments, they say, are not out of our control within capitalism because they are instruments, but because they are the instruments of capital. And that reads to me as another way of saying technology is neutral, and the problem is that it's in the hands of the wrong class. It's in the hands of the capitalists. It's a problem of which class controls it. And I don't know that after 10 years, I don't know how many people still think that and still do not see that values are embedded in the technology. They're expressed by the technology, and that they really are inseparable. This sounds to me like there is a separability there that I think is really, really questionable. Well, now we come to the a little bit more into focus, the idea of productionism, or productivism, as they refer to it in passing, a little further along. And I'm glad that they brought this up. I'd forgotten this was in here. I haven't seen this in a long time. They object to my reference to Baudrillard's Mirror of Production. The Mirror of Production is one of Baudrillard's earlier books before he became, as they call him, a postmodern scumbag. And the whole book is just refused. It's not discussed at all. There's no word about what's in that book, what it even means, why it's called The Mirror of Production, because Baudrillard is, or I would say more accurately, became a postmodern scumbag. I think it's worth pausing here. The fundamental point of the book is that Marxism is the mirror of production, and in that sense is the mirror of capitalism. It joins in valorizing production as much as capitalism does. And that's its fundamental critique. And this book came out in the early 70s. In fact, it might have come out even a little bit earlier than that. It was translated into English and published in 72. In other words, before Baudrillard started writing, admittedly, a lot of worthless posturing and verbal hyperbole and everything that didn't say anything. And what it did say, what you could pin down, is, I think, real and sound. I mean, we could agree on that. But The Mirror of Production, and I kind of have a suspicion as to why they don't want to go there, why they just dismiss it without talking about it. They brought it up, but they don't want to refer to its content. And then also in this very pointed review essay, the anti-civilization position is not just a necessary attack on leftism, but a counterproductive attack on everything in Marx. Now, I know that Freddie wouldn't subscribe to that, nor do I, and I've said it repeatedly. There are some things that are by now extremely, they're as obvious as they are important. For example, the reality of wage labor and the commodity, that is one extremely important way of defining modern life, the two poles, working and paying, if you put it that way, or the universality of class struggle in the modern world. Neither of those things are completely distinctive to Marx, by the way. You really don't need Marx for that, but anyway. And here's a more specific thing that I would object to. Zerzan's critique of Marx claims to link Marx's practice with the supposed problems of this theory, but the critique consists almost entirely of a list of Marx's personal shortcomings and says virtually nothing about his theory. Well, that's quite correct. It's In fact, you might even leave out the virtually, in this case, virtually nothing about his theory. The reference is to something I wrote in the late 70s called The Practical Marx, and this was explicitly about his personal life. It was explicitly not about theory, and it was only on that level. It had nothing to do with theory, so this is... It seems to be off base to use that as a failure to come to grips with theory when that particular piece has nothing to do with it. And then they mention Wildcat, and I don't think this publication is around, but what they said about this I think is very important to this wider discussion. They find it, quote, to show that Marx thought that capitalist progress and thus alienation was a necessary step to the full development of the individual. And they quote Marx's well-known statement declaring that the development of the productive forces is the precondition for communism. The development of the productive forces is the precondition for communism, which I think is the core of Marxism. Okay, and they kind of say, well, they're just kind of pulling quotes out. Oh, come on. Anyone who's read Marx knows that isn't just some random quote or some arbitrary use of quotes. That's, you know, they must be hoping that no one is conversant with Marx. That was consistent for decades. That's how he estimated everything as to whether or not it furthers the development of the productive apparatus, the means of production, technology. That's just so widely known that that seems really bizarre. A mere selection of quotes is not an analysis. Well, yeah, that's if you want to say that's a mere selection of quotes, that's quite odd. I think you can check that out. Well, and they don't really want to embrace this, needless to say, that the development of the forces of production are central. They say that productivism is only one trajectory from his work, and that's the one that they would call objectivism. But on the whole, they argue, or they state, Marx's theory also points to the active negation of capital through thoroughgoing class struggle on all fronts. Well, what is the active negation of capital if it doesn't come to grips with productivism? I'm not sure. I think that's kind of an evasion. Well, then they go on to... and I think that's the core thing. And I think, as I've said so many, many, many times, that is, in the most general sense, the meaning of progress in the modern, generally leftist sense. That is not questioned. That has to go forward. The development of the means of production, and that is kind of increasingly embarrassing, it seems to me, for people that are still trying to salvage the main force of Marxism, the main predicates, but there you are. But they say, well, all of us are forced to make a response to increased pollution and environmental destruction brought about by the growth of the alien power that is capital. Well, you know what? Increased pollution and the destruction of the biosphere, it isn't caused, you know, let's face it, the alien power that is capital, well, that's one way to put it, but it's actually materially caused by mass production and standardizing technoculture that's like a cancer growing everywhere. I mean, you don't want to... Why not just say that? I mean, the other may be true as an abstraction. Let's kind of coax out what is actually going on, and that's the same reticence in terms of productivism. That's just the same thing. And it concludes, the essential problem in Marx and Marxism is not the belief in progress or productivism, but objectivism. And it nowhere defines objectivism, and it just strikes me as a completely weak kind of thing. That's the problem? Objectivism? What? What is objectivism? What? Come on. Let's come to grips with the... with. If you don't want to, if you want to say, look, yeah, I think production is fine. I like the mass world. I like mass production. We need more of it. That's how we measure progress. That's how we measure satisfaction and liberation and everything else. Well, if that's your point of view, why don't you cop to it? And if it isn't your point of view, why don't you say so? Why don't you prioritize saying so? And instead of all this, I mean, that's the way it strikes me. That somebody recently quoted, by the way, from A Dagger's Drawn. Some, I think this individual is Montale, E. Montale. The quote is, "Today we can only tell you what we are not, what we don't want." Well, I'd like to hear what they don't want. If they don't want this kind of industrialized world, then great. I would be so much more happy to hear that. I'm not trying to nail people for the point of nailing somebody. I got, you know, there's much more interesting work to do and questions to try to deal with. But and that is always answered by Marxists anyway. And here we get back to that social relations mantra again. Social relations means just about anything. It can mean almost anything. I said it before, I'll say it again. To some people, it is used to set the limits of explicit discussion. And what you'll get there, what you get eternally thousands of times over and over, well, we don't want to say what society would include or wouldn't include. That's up to the correct social relations, or relations to production is what it means. Well, would you say that, for example, about, say, racism or sexism? Do you want a world without racism or sexism? Well, we can't really say, you know, that would be up to social relations. You know, no, I don't think you would. I don't know. I think that's kind of unlikely. Let's put it that way. Well, so I think there are people that were aware, or maybe they will be aware, maybe they will download this program and have something to say. If you want to have something to say right now, please dial on in, 541-687-1833, or I guess there's the IM thing that is just possibly working here. Well, that took up a lot of time, and I don't know if I'm going to just keep going on and on about this. I think there are people that are impervious to this thing, and it the primitivist haters, well, that's fine. It, you know, do whatever you want, go wherever you want, but, you know, it's one thing to disagree, and I've said this repeatedly, but to deny and to say that the using terms like leftist or liberal are just plain content-free, they're only pejoratives, they're only ways to put people down. Well, if you've spoken about this in public, if you've written books, you've written essays, you've many, many issues of green anarchy, including, and here's a real pointed one, and maybe for you new people, you might want to check it out, and you know where to get it. We have a series called Back to Basics, and one of these sort of inserts is called The Nature of the Left. It's an 8-page thing, and this spells it out also. Certainly not everybody is aware of this. You can get a hold of it. Other people who have been around for ages are very well aware of it, although they kind of pretend that they don't know what's meant by this. But I've tried to make that a little clearer once again, and so... Alrighty. I hope that made sense. Let's see. Well, just got the latest Earth First. We'd had kind of a problem in getting them. There was some kind of a glitch in their automated mailing or something like that. And I think this is... I'm looking at the July-August issue. Not bad. There's some good things in it. I think the Sidmeister was correct in pointing this out. High-tech genocide is one piece. And I remember Daisy Chung making this point about, for one of the things she talked about is coltan mining in Africa and its relationship to technology, and how the more social justice issues, if you want to pigeonhole them that way, in terms of exploitation of people, is intimately linked with the technological question. And here's one way where it is. Coltan is a vital element in cell phones, laptops, all that other high-tech electronics. And this article points out that more than 4 million have died in Central Africa in a war over coltan. Yeah, it's all tied together. It always is. And the millions of cell phones going right into the old landfill, those are so toxic. I mean, you can just take almost any artifact of modernity and quickly dope out the suffering, the congealed suffering right there that we hold in our hands in terms of, for example, cell phones. There's a good piece in here about the Luddites. Let's see. Are we Luddites or cynical consumers? This is an anti-civilization thing in kind of theory and practice. Yeah, lots of information. Some of these things, I would say, are kind of the same old song and don't have a whole lot of vision or critique behind them, but I found several things that I like quite a lot in this one. Yeah. Here's something I just, let's see, yeah, yesterday. What's the matter with indie media? Well, we got the end of environmentalism, the end of unions, the end of everything. Now it's the end of indie media. And InfoShop, by the way, is once again offline. They've got problems not only politically but technically, and now people are losing interest in indie media. I'm not too surprised by that, given the general, well, I mean, you could say it's drifting to the center or however you like to put that, but it kind of didn't want too much radical stuff there. Not that you can't, or used to be able to get some information from it, but it was, it's kind of well known. It's rarely stated, but it's obvious to, I guess, quite a lot of people that it's much more of a progressive, liberal kind of thing, and rather hostile to anarchists. There are some exceptions, but that's been the nature of that project. And right there, gee, why would it be not so inspiring? Why would it be kind of the same old sort of, you know, related to the protest as usual kind of thing? Let's see. Kind of croaking here, kind of got a dry throat. Well, I wanted to mention Species Trader again. I'm not going to read from it or anything, but this is such a knockout, and it's just got so much solid stuff on a deep level. And it will be available, I think, well, let's see. I know you can order it already, but I think it's going to be shipped in this upcoming week. We're supposed to get 50 of them here at Green Anarchy in the first week of August, and this is sure worth it. It's really like a book. It's almost 200 pages, and it's bound, kind of like Do or Die. And it is really, it's really rich, and it's going to be worth the $10 to you, I think. There's just a lot to think about here, and maybe it will deepen this whole stuff about anarcho-primitivism and how whatever it is, you know, it gives a little more serious stuff for discussion, for thought. Okay, let's see. Maybe go out. This is hate to give you a laundry list here, but I wanted to kind of get rid of some of this stuff here. And some people are not real interested in this kind of thing, but, you know, maybe it's just worth mentioning just in passing. North Dakota, just very, very recent stuff here. Death of thousands of young white pelicans at a wildlife refuge. The death of right whales. I didn't even know there were right whales. Ever heard that? Right whales? Not, there's different kinds of whales. That's a new one on me. There are only 350 of them left, apparently, in existence. Looking bad for that. Warming Pacific Ocean. Ida seabird deaths on the, on the West Coast. Dead seabirds from Central California to British Columbia, raising alarm about the rising open ocean temperatures and dwindling plankton population. This is killing various seabirds. That's from the journal Science, and also from the journal Science, it's a weekly. The diversity of fish in the world's open oceans is declining drastically based on catch records from Japanese fishing fleets. Data from 50 years of catches, and they now have a more complete picture of world oceans. Tracking the wood turtle in New Jersey. The wood turtle is disappearing. There were 2 million chimps in... there were 2 million chimps about 100 years ago. There are 150,000 left. And the rainforest, the Amazonia rainforest, according to the current issue of Ecologists, may be reaching the point that's being progressively destroyed, as everybody knows, but it's also approaching the point where it's going to be shrinking and dying on its own, because it won't, the structure of it as an ecosystem of its size and so forth is being so compromised that now that's becoming a prediction. Oh, here's a good one. A series of explosions rocked the valley solvents and chemical plants a couple of days ago, Thursday, in Fort Worth. You could see the smoke 30 miles away. Good old China, 65, no, it looks like 80 miners were killed on Monday. Thousands of coal miners are killed in China every year. But now they're going to wind power. I read this big wind power thing. Well, I hope fewer people die, but it's also doesn't escape notice that this is it's the same industrialization project. If you got the power, you'll be doing all these things, building the malls and the freeways and every and all the cars and everything. So yippee for wind power. O'Hare Airport, they've announced plans. The Federal Aviation Administration has approved plans for a $15 billion expansion of O'Hare Airport. Yeah, more industrialism and more silence from the left. Here's always another thing about the world's tallest buildings. There's always this derby to now a number of them are in South Asia, Taipei, Malaysia, China. And which one is the highest lately, and all that stuff. Carol Willis, founder and director of the Skyscraper Museum in Manhattan, says real bragging rights to being the tallest go back 3,000 years to Babylon, to Mesopotamia. The whole concept of the skyscraper has always been indigenous to the city. Well, it jars on the sensibility to say indigenous, referring to cities or skyscrapers, but you get the meaning. Yeah, this isn't anything new. Yeah, civilization, anyone? Well, I guess we've run out of time. Okay, I guess we'll see you next week. And like I said, I think we will have a live report about Feral Visions and talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. See you later.
My mama sent me down to school.